Hello, and welcome to the Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
This Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by Sam, and we're going to be discussing Wonder Woman Earth 1 Volume 3 hardcover. Sam, how you doing tonight?
I am wonderful, John. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Now, it was about a year ago that we talked about the first two volumes of the Wonder Woman Earth 1 stuff, and I think we came out of it thinking there were pros and cons to the story and stuff. Overall, as I recall, I thought they were all right, but then I read this third one. And I don't know if it's just the amount of time having, because I'd pretty much read volumes 1 and 2, I think, almost back to back. I mean, it's been a year, so, you know, if that delay factored into my thinking or not, I'm not sure. I was not crazy about this volume.
I'm with you. I remember really liking volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
I remember being meh to disliking volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
This one I didn't care for at all.
Yeah, I think there was a definite, I don't want to say downturn in quality, because it's
no,
the art's great, the execution of the story is fine. It's the story they chose to tell where a lot of my problems came in.
I tend to agree with that, and I'm not, Yannick Paquette's a fine artist. That being said, for an issue where we spend a lot of time on Paradise Island,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of very, very, very square jawlines.
Yeah.
I understand these are warrior women, but in some ways, they're just bodybuilder men with slightly wider hips.
I definitely felt that way, too. And much more so in this volume than I recall feeling in the past volumes.
Yeah, I remember really loving the art in the first, which, as I remember, was by someone different. And I believe Mr. Paquette started with Volume 2, but I could be wrong on that. I will look it up, but yeah.
I can't remember. These things come out so infrequently that they've got very little kind of story momentum or anything with me.
Yep.
And, man, this thing starting out 1,000 years in the future or whatever, I'm like, wait a sec, where did we leave off and why should I care?
Yeah.
You know? And I know there were a few parts of the previous volume that you thought were a little, I guess, philosophically not to your liking or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, I can see it, but I don't know. And here I'm like, wow, it felt like we spent the first, I don't know, 25 pages or so with the Amazons preparing to conquer man's world because they can fix everything. And there was a opinion that this story had that was far from subtle.
Yes. And yeah, I agree. I began to notice it in volume 2. A little more so than you did, or at least it affected me more than it did you in that volume. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one is even worse in that regard. And I did look, by the way, Yannick Paquette has done all three volumes. But yeah, the art, again, it's not bad, but it certainly has changed through the volumes.
Didn't find the architecture here as striking as I found it, I think, in that first volume.
Which was, yes, the wide shots of Paradise Island were amazing,
mm-hmm.
in that first one. And, well, I believe it's the opening page, yeah, is kind of a similar shot as to some of the ones we saw in that first one. Somehow, yeah, it's not as striking, and there's not nearly as many of those huge, you know, kind of swooping architecture shots that we saw in the first volume.
Yeah. Well, and on that first page, the color's a little washed out, and
yep.
It doesn't kind of pop off the page and stuff as much. And again, it's not bad. It's beautifully rendered.
It is.
It just doesn't impress me as much.
Yeah, and I know some people love it. I am not a fan, and really, it's kind of all over basically anything on the island. These rather unique panel borders and panel shapes and, like I said, I appreciate it, but it's almost a little too artistic for artistic sake.
Yeah.
And detrimental to storytelling.
Yeah, when you've got the crazy ornate panel borders, you know, forming the W like it's part of her costume or something like that, it's busy for the sake of being busy.
Well, and it's the negative spaces. So after the double page splash of kind of the funeral pyre where you first see the wide shot.
Yeah.
That next page is the one I think you're talking about, well, one of the, because it's on multiple pages.
I was thinking actually the one after it, but yeah, this is another good example of it.
Yeah, fair enough. But here's the thing. It's still a square book. Those two pages, there's a lot of unnecessary negative space that doesn't add to anything. You know, like all, particularly the first page, I mentioned all that white.
Let's look at that page for a second.
Sure.
Am I reading too much into this to be thinking that it almost seems like, okay, the bottom panel would be like where her trunks would be. The top part would be, you know, I mean, it's like it's, we're looking at her, not her costume, but you know what I mean? It's like, what are we exactly staring at here?
Yes, you could absolutely argue that the lower panel could be described as the hip region of a human form, and the upper part could be an upper torso, absolutely. Yeah.
And I don't know if that was intended or not, and it's like, the crazy borders don't really add anything to the story, and there comes a point where it's like, just tell me the story.
Yeah, exactly. And same thing, like the next page you were talking about, there's a lot of negative blue space around that middle panel to make room for the, you know, all the that fancy ornate border that, I don't know, that panel just could have been wider and it could have been, you know, three panels across, you know, down the page and there would have been more actual art.
I think if we had a version of this that was just simplistic panel borders and such, and you did kind of an A-B test with people and stuff, I really don't know that it would move the needle either way, necessarily. Or at least not. I don't know that having the ornate stuff adds to the story.
I agree with you. I will say this, though. I do realize there are people that love this and think it somehow really enhanced. I remember thinking the same thing with when J.H. Williams was doing Batwoman, and his panel borders and layouts kept getting weirder and weirder, and for me, harder to read.
Yeah.
But I know there were fans that thought it was some of the greatest art they'd ever seen. So, like I said, this will speak to a portion of the audience.
True.
I'm just not one of them, and it sounds like you aren't either.
Well, there comes a point where it's, they're spending, I think, more time on that than some of the basics of the storytelling.
Yes. Yeah, and I agree. It gets in the way of the storytelling.
There were some places where the storytelling here, I was confused as to what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's, I've read a couple of comics before. I can navigate, you know, panels and even the craziness here and stuff. But when I'm trying to figure out, wait, how much time is elapsing here? Is this really happening at the same time? And wait, who is this character? I thought it was this person, but it's not. And,
yep.
You know, when I've got to flip back a couple of pages to reassess what I think I'm reading, to me, that's not in favor of the story.
Yeah.
Now, there are times where there's some subtlety. It's like, okay, wait, I think I missed something because it was, you know, something like that. This is surface-level stuff that I'm confused on.
Yeah, and there's some other things in these panel borders and art choices that are done for an effect a la an art director would do that I don't... Anything with the more S-curve panel borders tends to be Diana and Paradise. And for some reason, when you get into Aries and men and war, you get a lot of circular and oval borders and panels.
Okay.
Again, that's one of those things where it's art direction run amok. It's for the sake of gratifying itself, not necessarily making the story clearer.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone go, oh, look how brilliant I am. You know, yeah, but it didn't really help.
Well, if the storyteller's worried about convincing me how clever he is...
Yeah, exactly. And that's what part of this feels like.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. Now one question I had, because I could never really figure it out.
Okay.
When we first get to the protest or whatever in front of the White House.
Okay.
Got the person who's meeting with Captain Trevor and stuff before he gets there. He's in the limo or whatever. There's this lady in front of the White House with a cell phone. And she looks just enough like kind of the classic Diana Prince that, hey, it's a Wonder Woman book. That was kind of my assumption as to who we were looking at.
I tend to agree, but I don't.
It's clearly not. Or it becomes clear later it's not. She uses profanity after immediately saying she doesn't cuss. She gets knocked out
with a single punch. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's...
That was my first clue. This isn't Wonder Woman.
Exactly.
You know, and that's the kind of thing where if I'm like, wait a sec, I was thinking this because you didn't clarify. I think there's a problem.
No, I'm with you. When I got to that page, too, I went, okay, we've gone through the whole, the building the machines, okay. And I'm like, oh, there's Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's not until she gets knocked out and, oh, she's not getting back up. And then you see Wonder Woman kind of viewing that.
Yeah.
From afar. You know, okay, so that's not her.
Yeah, I found that kind of confusing.
Yeah.
The whole bit with how Trevor escapes from the barracks or whatever it was with the, what was it, the adaptive chameleon contact lens. And I'm like, okay, he's got to escape from the disciplinary barracks, fine. Doing it off screen, kind of crazy. Doing it with super spy tech out of left field. That's the sort of thing I would expect in Mission Impossible, not in Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And it just, why put him in there if you just immediately have to break him out off panel?
Well, and why? Yeah. And maybe it's a naming convention I'm unfamiliar with.
Hmm.
The layman would still use the term prison. Military, last I knew, which to be fair was 10, 12 years ago, still used the word stockade.
Or brig, maybe?
Or brig for naval personnel, ship personnel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this disciplinary, like, and with the orange jumpsuit and everything, it's clearly prison. So it's either some really modern military naming convention that I'm just unaware of, or again, it's confusing for the sake of confusing.
Yeah, either way, I found it a little confusing.
Yeah.
So, and again, some of the stuff that was going on was fine. Others of it was, you know, where they decided to go with Max Lord here, I mean, was kind of, I think, revealed in the previous volume, but it had been long enough since I've read it that it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, know? But he was building those things last time.
Building those things, yes. Being revealed to be Ares, not so much, maybe. Or maybe he was. I don't remember.
No, he was not. Yes. The fact that he was Ares was different than him building the Ares robots.
Yeah, yeah.
That was new to this volume.
But the whole setup of the robots absolutely was last time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of the time we're seeing Wonder Woman here, she's surrounded by Artemis, Donna, and a few others, yet they never really do anything in the story.
No, other than the fight she has fairly early on with the Spartan woman, none of them do anything.
Yeah, so I was a little confused by that, and it's just, they were jumping back and forth enough between the present day and this 1,000 years from now, and that's a storytelling convention I'm just not in favor of to begin with.
Yeah.
And I thought it was used here jarringly so. And the whole bit with the Amazons kind of taking over the world, I mean, you're in a shared universe here, presumably. I think that's a step too far.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's, depending on how you look at it, but yeah, it's hard to root for the conquerors that just want to conquer humanity as your heroes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even more so, you could argue, okay, maybe this must take place after, you know, the Superman and Titans and Batman and other present-day stuff, but Green Lantern's a little bit in the future and doesn't seem to be, you know, ruled on this peaceful planet of Earth, you know, from what we've seen there.
Well, Earth wasn't that peaceful in that story either, but yes.
Well, that's my point, is they're basically saying after they take over, you know, they have 1,000 years of peace leading up to that 1,000 years from now.
Yeah.
So if Green Lantern's taking place in the near future getting there and stuff, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you.
And, you know, why call all these things so-and-so Earth 1 if they're not on the same Earth?
Yeah.
So I was going through this and just kind of, you know, I wasn't hating it or anything, but I wasn't enjoying it as much as I thought I should be and as much as I had wanted to be.
Yeah, I'm kind of, yeah. Like I said, I didn't love it, yeah, but I kind of saw it coming in Volume 2, so this doesn't exactly surprise me.
Yeah, and again, we talked about that in Volume 2.
Yep.
And you'd definitely seen it there, and I could see where you were coming from. Here, it just felt like it was smacking me in the face, left, right, and center.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they took what we had seen there and just cranked it up a couple of notches.
Yep.
I mean, there were parts here where it felt overtly political and, frankly, sexist at times.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you finally get to the very end. I am not I enjoy Wonder Woman, but I'm certainly no Wonder Woman scholar. Has this child ever showed up anywhere before?
the child there at the very end?
Yes.
Well, sort of. The way I read it is that's her mother.
You think that? Okay.
They've got the eternal heart or whatever, and she's formed a child of clay around it.
Okay.
To kind of, you know, flip the story of you know, her origin.
Yeah, the mother from the daughter is born. I get that. Okay. But the idea that, I guess my question is, Diana, nowhere in normal canon, has had a daughter, or has she?
Depends how you define normal canon. If you count Earth 2, she absolutely did. That was Fury.
Well, yes, fair enough. Yeah. Okay.
Which worked out great until they got rid of the Earth 2 Wonder Woman but kept Fury around. Kind of got confused as to, well, where did she come from?
Yes. But the post-crisis main DC Universe Wonder Woman never had a child.
Not that I recall, and certainly not for a long-term permanent story thing like they've done with Superman a time or two, etc.
Yeah.
There may have been one-off stories where it was either an imaginary child or, you know, something of that ilk.
Yeah, and I realize you get the whole reformed and, yeah, but I don't know. To me, it's important to the Amazons that they are who they are and they don't reproduce, I guess is the right word. Yeah, it is the right word.
Mm-hmm.
There's a set number of them, kind of.
Well, that's the problem with that kind of a premise when you've got, you know, the lack of procreation to get more people into the society and stuff, because every story you tell, when you kill one of them off, you've got that many less.
Yeah. But it's what made Diana unique, too. Mm-hmm. She was the only being who was truly a child of Paradise Island.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they wound up later with, in the main continuity, I think Donna Troy having been raised there for a bit.
Yeah.
Then in the New 52 continuity with Supergirl having been raised there for a bit.
Yeah, and in the New 52, they also kind of took away her clay and turned her into, what, a daughter of, was it Zeus?
I forget.
Yeah, but I do remember, yeah, somewhere in the New 52, I know they undid the whole clay thing. And
mm-hmm.
Said that was an excuse for here's what really happened kind of thing.
Well, I get where creators need the freedom to be able to say, hey, I'm going to tweak some of the backstory and whatnot.
Sure.
But there does come a point where you got to tread a little carefully when doing that.
Yeah.
And if you're going to, you know, ostensibly improve upon what's already there and something has been there for, you know, 60, 70, 80 plus years, you want to make sure you're actually improving it, not just changing it.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I actually enjoyed that New 52 story. It was different. I did enjoy it. But, yeah, you know, but much like all of the New 52, it kind of came and went and sort of doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's increasingly too true of a lot of kind of things DC has done over the last really few decades. You know, there's a shelf life on all of this stuff, and I get it. And I'm not saying I want the version of the characters that was around in the late 30s and early 40s. But there comes a point if I'd like the take to stick around for more than just a few years.
Yeah.
You know, and there were a couple of things they changed here, I feel, just for the sake of changing. You know, the six-pointed stars and a few things like that visually. And, I don't know, for me it's just a little distracting.
Yeah.
So, I also felt the bit with the plot line in the future of the dissidents and whatnot and what happens with them and how their plot just fails, because, well, it's a utopia. You just can't do certain things. It's like, well, that was kind of lame. I just, that whole plot line didn't work great for me, and the fact they kept cutting back and forth to it was not to my liking.
Yeah.
You know, I thought part of the story was a little just over the top in some places. I felt it was jumping around a little bit. And also, parts of it were just crazy long-winded.
Well, yes.
You know, the whole opening bit of, I mean, just start the story already.
Well, that opening bit, I thought the sequence where she had to go to the underworld with the fates.
Mm-hmm. That went on a bit longer than it needed to.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's an aspect where you've got the full length of a hardcover, so you've got some room to kind of stretch a little in terms of the scene lengths and some stuff like that. But there comes a point of, you got to keep the story moving.
Yeah.
So, I'm not quite sure where I would rank this compared to all of the other Earth One hardcovers. I'd probably start near the bottom and see where it fits in. It just, it was feeling like this was, they're at the point of wrapping up quote-unquote trilogies or whatever, I'm not sure how many more Earth One hardcovers they're going to be.
Well, none of us know. Interestingly, Jim Lee was specifically asked about this late last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're still publishing them. They're just not regular. And he said something like, you know, we reach out to creators and we want their best work, so we give them the time. But as I remember the second half of that statement, he basically said, well, you know, we used to do prestige format. Now we're doing hardcovers. And if you look at the net, but a lot of those are coming up or were coming out of that black list. I'm not sure where these fit into that publishing plan anymore.
I'm not sure what kind of publishing plan they've got anymore. And I think the Earth One initiative was an interesting idea 10 years ago when it started, or 10 plus years ago when it started.
Yeah.
But the slow trickle, and we've talked about this before, it takes too long to get these things out. There's no story momentum, at least for me, between hardcovers. And this is part of why I feel, at least for me, comics work better as a periodical of short installments that are not, you know, 100% self-contained, but are not just mere chapters of a longer story. You know, they're meant to be installments that have their own beginning, middle, end of something and build to a larger whole. And having those either at a monthly cadence or something along those lines, it just works a lot better because it's like, oh yeah, I can remember, you know, what was going on when I read that last one. And here, you know, they have, I don't know how many pages this thing was, but they had the room to kind of get me back into the story. And they didn't bother to do so.
Yeah.
You know, and as a self-contained volume, this did not work for me.
No, not at all. It's clearly the second half of Volume 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Because it's dealing with the whole Maxwell Lord stuff. They even had the callback to Dr. Psycho.
Yep.
And if I'd read this shortly after reading the second volume, I might have liked it a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might not have, but I might have. I don't know. So I just, nothing in this makes me think, wow, I can't wait to get a Volume 4 of this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it was 2.5 years between Volume 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doing some quick research, it looks like J. Michael Straczynski has implied recently, as in late 2020, that the Flash of Earth One is coming out soon. And back in late 19, Francis Manapul apparently said the Aquaman Earth One he was working on got repurposed to become the Aquaman for the 5G, which I'm not even sure that whatever happened to that.
Unless they leverage some of that for the Future State stuff.
For the Future State, exactly.
But they did more of an Aqua Girl or Aqua Woman kind of a thing for that. I don't know how much of what they were going to do for Earth One they've repurposed, or if there's any real, I don't say relevance to this stuff. I mean, if the stories were great in of themselves, that's enough. But in some cases, they're not.
Well, and yeah. Well, I wasn't a huge, huge fan of all of them. I thought the Superman ones were okay for what they were.
Mm-hmm.
They were fairly coherent. We've still got another Batman one to talk about, which we'll do next time.
Yeah.
But I didn't think they were that bad. The Titans one, I actually kind of enjoyed. It was totally different. I'll give it that. It was not. Mm-hmm. But for what it was fine. Like I said, this Wonder Woman one, I didn't care for. Green Lantern, I couldn't tell if it was weird and missing something, or if it was just kind of like the Titans, where it was totally different in its own thing.
Well, and that one was trying to be, I think, a little bit, almost more of a sci-fi action movie kind of a thing. Kind of, sort of.
Well, yeah. And while the story continued from Volume 1 to 2, they were almost like different style. Style isn't the right word. Almost different genres of books.
Mm-hmm. But not bad.
No.
Not brilliant, necessarily, but not bad. This is one, though, where I think this branch of the Earth One stuff just is deteriorating from volume to volume because it's gotten more kind of indulgent from volume to volume.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they've got to go do a classic take on Wonder Woman from any particular era or whatever, but I don't find this Wonder Woman character particularly likable or really have anyone in the story that I'm particularly rooting for.
There's no one in this story that's relatable. You're dealing with gods that basically dismiss all of humanity. So they're not particularly likable as gods, because none of them are really on humanity's side.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no humans other than the villains, to some degree, in any of these, except Steve.
I was going to say, Steve Trevor's
there's nothing wrong with Steve, but he's so minor and buried in all three of these stories.
Did he actually do anything of merit in this issue, or this volume?
No. He broke out of prison, and then there's that weird sequence.
Well, he pulls her out of death, or whatever, yeah.
Diana from the Shadow Realm.
Yeah.
And then there's that panel in the future where he's in that ridiculous outfit.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense.
I was kind of puzzled as to how he was still around 1,000 years from now.
Yes. And looks like some weird mix between Captain America and Richard Simmons.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, part of it for me, with the baggage I bring to this, is when they say, oh, we're 1,000 years from now, I'm like, are we going to see the Legion?
No, no.
And we don't, so.
No.
Was frustrated by that. Yeah, I'm sure there are going to be some people who love this, and it's more to their liking and stuff, and that's great.
Yeah, I mean, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. Nothing wrong with that. You know, and we read it, like I said, technically there's nothing wrong with this book. The art's not necessarily to my liking, but the draftsmanship, the quality is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison is very hit and miss for me. I don't dislike him as much as some people, but I certainly am not a Grant Morrison fan. This is one of his misses that seems to be missing more and more as it goes on, but okay.
Well, it's interesting, because prior to this, I would have said his work falls in kind of two camps. The stuff I like and the stuff where I just think he leaves some of it off, out of the stories. Like, he's got it in his mind, it just doesn't make it to the page. Because it's like, oh, you should have to figure this out and work for it. And this was neither of those two things.
That I agree with. No, this is different than either of those two, and I agree that does describe most of his work.
Yeah. I mean, he seemed to put down on the page what he wanted to put down. I didn't care for the story he was telling.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't need to like all of it.
But yeah, I think Grant Morrison fans will probably enjoy this book. Yannick Paquette fans, again, and people for, I want to say more experimental, but it's not the right word. It's very, very clean, beautiful line.
Mm-hmm.
It is not rough. It's not scratchy. It's not painterly. This is, in many ways, very, very classic, clean line work. But he does push the boundaries, like we talked about with the panel borders, the way the stories are broken, you know, the way the panels are broken up, the way the pages flow. And again, people that enjoy that art style may really love this, you know, love the artness.
Or at least those pages that do those things. Because there are some pages where it's just regular kind of panel borders and stuff.
There are a few. But like I said, there is a design philosophy to the book from the Corinthian script in the underworld between the panel borders. Like I said, the F's curves with Paradise mm-hmm. Island, the circles for Aries. There's definitely a design feel, and people that are design nerds and into that kind of stuff might love this.
Yeah.
So again, I'm not saying it's a bad book that no one should read. It wasn't for me.
I agree with all of that. I'm almost wondering, though, based on the panel borders and stuff, if part of what they're saying about the future, where we've got very white, plain borders,
uh-huh.
is if there's kind of a blandness to the future.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it, yeah.
So, yeah, again, I think it was from a technical point of view of how's the art, how is the execution of the story and stuff, I think a lot of it, generally speaking, is particularly on the art side, fantastic. Story side, reasonably well done. There's a couple of things at the plot, the pacing, and that sort of a level that I think could have been more to my liking. And again, that's not to say it's bad, it's just I didn't care for some of it. And I do think there's a few things here and there that the editor really should have said, hey, you know, you gotta clean this up, make this a little clearer or something.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, again, if you're enjoying this series, if you enjoy Grant Morrison, if you really enjoy the, I don't want to say the art side of, but the design work of books and comics, there's a lot of things in here those people would enjoy. And, you know, if you're into any of those things, I'd suggest you check it out.
Yeah, and again, the sense of design, I think, is a fair thing to compliment the book on. I felt it was a little overdone in places, but yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, I'm not sure if there's going to be a fourth volume of this. I'm not sure if there is, if I'm going to get on board with it or not. The Flash one, I'll have to see what the solicit looks like. That one is tempting.
Well, It's Straczynski. The nice thing about Straczynski, much like Morrison, I either tend to love or hate his work, and he's got a very good batting average. The couple of things I dislike, I really dislike, but I really enjoy almost all the rest of it.
I think he's a crazy talented writer. I think Babylon 5 was just a brilliant TV series.
Yep.
I've enjoyed a lot of his work in comics. Where I think he falls down for me is when he tries to get a little too clever.
Yep.
Here's what really was going on with, you know, the Fantastic Four's origin or Spider-Man's origin or something like that.
Well,
if he's going to try to uncover the truth of the lightning strike that powered Barry Allen, it's like, I don't know about that.
Fair enough.
And it's the sort of thing he's done before.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you mentioned Spider-Man. That's the one I really dislike. So, yes, I hope he doesn't do anything like that.
And the funny thing is, he's actually got some interesting ideas. It's just cramming them into an existing,
yep,
you know, backstories where I start to have the problems. And again, there's always the feeling of he's trying to show how clever he is.
Well, yeah. But again, one of the nice things, like I said, Superman, which he did, the Earth One books, I don't know if they came out regularly or faster. They just started first. So we got,
they started first, yeah.
We got the three volumes faster than any of the rest. I mean, it's been 5 or 6 years since we got the third volume of Superman now.
Yeah.
But again, with Earth One, you can have a much different origin in Earth One and it not feel as wrong as when it's in Spider-Man, you know, 320.
Mm-hmm. True, true. I just hope if we ever see any of these Earth One characters in some kind of multiversal crossover with the mainstream stuff, that there is some comment of how time just moves slower on this world.
Yeah.
That's why not much has happened. So, yeah, I definitely, like I said, think there's an audience for this. I just am less of it than I was at the beginning.
And I feel very, very much the same way.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
Cool.
The August previews came out on July 28th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 165 is the morning of Saturday, August 7th. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.